SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. About 4 minutes into hour three, Nick Tamaro's joining us, and I did hear the Pennsylvania ad, and it makes me realize I should provide the latest. There was official word, kind of speculated, yesterday and earlier in the week that both Penn National and Parks had an angle on getting started. Well, Penn National will start a week from today on the 19th, and it looks like Parks is set for the 22nd. So the track that is inexplicably, to some degree, hung out to dry right now is Presque Isle. And it's weird because, Erie has been in pretty good shape when it comes to cases out, out in northwestern Pennsylvania. They could be northeastern Ohio or western New York, but it happens to be Pennsylvania. And so Presque Isle is right now very uncertain yet. So, but Penn National and Parks are set for the 19th and the 22nd, respectively. I wanted to slip that in. And was there anything else that we mentioned? The Woodbine action and Golden Gate. So, all right. So now we're free and clear to talk a little Lone Star and Belmont Park Cross Country Pick 5. Nick Tamaro, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Let's quickly do a little bit of recapping of opening week. Of course, we were a couple of days in when we spoke last Friday, and now we've had five, the first 5 days plus the sixth day yesterday, and some impressions of what we're seeing, and especially, last week's action.
I think as far as the racing goes, pretty tough not to acknowledge the job that Irad Ortiz did through the first few days. And I think he turned the most heads, both with his good rides and his shenanigans in the feature on Sunday aboard Therapist, who was able to get his nose down in front in the first defense. And then that number stayed up despite a relatively lengthy inquiry where it seemed as if Therapist bore in through the stretch and affected Majestic Dunhill, potentially even Flavius as well. But all in all, Irad rode really well opening week. No trainer stood out more than Chad Brown, which is to be expected. Chad's barn is primarily everything set up for him to do well from April through December, and so he was probably more affected than any other big barn by the interruption in racing that took place around mid-March. And he had 8 wins opening week and added another one yesterday, and ironically, 2 of those wins came from Value Engineering and Value Proposition, both of whom offered quite a bit of value relative to the prices that I think we all thought they would be. Yesterday, Mr. Alec received a great deal of money, and then that was a tad surprising, but anyway, the racing was great. It's great to have it back. Despite some showers on opening day and Saturday and even yesterday, if you want to fold yesterday in, every race that has been carted for turf has been able to run on it. Clearly, the inactivity and then the freshness of the turf course is definitely working to Naira's favor right now. And, it was a great way to get things started. Nice to see Vekoma get a grade one. He's always been a high-quality horse and one that I think was deserving of it. And he certainly ran very well in the Carter to get the job done, and it was great to see Newspaper of Record back with the type of performance that I think we all expected throughout her 3-year-old season, and it just never materialized. But surely if she's able to offer that moving forward, then you can add her to the arsenal of strong turf females that Chad Brown has, because she was very impressive. She clearly likes the turf course with a little bit of give in it, so that helped. But all in all, it was an excellent performance, and I think we saw a lot of good racing. Certainly excited to see it continue with the FIPS tomorrow, and then obviously the Belmont next week, and that big day on July 4th as the 25-day stand is loaded with stakes. So stake a day. Tough to beat.
Exactly. Any quick references to today's action? I haven't put the picks up yet, but I and the analysis, but I will.
You know, it's a good feature. The commentator with Mr. Buff going postward likely to be a pretty heavy favorite. I think the test that Mr. Buff gets today is really to determine whether, I don't want to call him an aqueduct horse for course because he's not an aqueduct horse for course, but he's a horse who's better at aqueduct than he is anywhere else. And part of that also comes with the competition that he faces at aqueduct, and the competition here is undoubtedly quite a bit tougher. There's a lot more depth in this field than, with all due respect to Honor Up and some of the horses he's been facing, Dynamax Prime, Backside of the Moon, Adventist, those kind of horses, you know, Build to Suit and Bank It and Funny Guy, those are really high quality New York breds. And I actually took a little bit of a shot against Mr. Buff with Build to Suit, figuring that maybe off the layoff he might be at his best. He ran very, very well off the bench when he won on a 14-month freshening back in January of 2019. I know a mile's really more, probably not quite his game, probably a little bit more suited to a horse like Mr. Buff, but yeah, we'll see if anybody can dethrone the clear leader of this division. There are a couple of good turf races bracketing that. I'm going to take a little bit of a chance with Fortune's Fool in the eighth, hoping that Kendrick Carmouche gets aggressive right out of the gate and tries to wire the field. This horse ran very, very well in his lone turf start last year at Aqueduct. And granted, December turf racing at Aqueduct you have to be a little bit careful with, but all in all, he ran great, but the only horse to withstand a very strong pace and held in nicely for third. And then in the nightcap, I think that this is an opportunity where, you know, if you're against Cham Rocket like I am, and he receives the kind of money that David Aragona is predicting, and David's right about this almost every single time, then there's going to be a tremendous amount of value here. I mean, Cham Rocket is just, quite honestly, not much horse. And I think you've got real options like Astronaut and Sandro the Great. Sandro the Great's got an awesome turf pedigree, really should improve going to the turf. A lot of it on the dam side, and obviously Empire Makers can handle the turf. And I thought Astronaut ran very well in his turf debut, can improve, should be forwardly placed. All of these John O'Connor horses, whether he bred them or bought them, they all can run long. And it's all that German influence in the pedigree, and so I think getting to the mile and a quarter should really help a horse like Astronaut. And then, of course, you'll have to use one or both of the Chads between Starry Decisis and Amano, both of whom have shown some ability in prior starts, but undoubtedly will both be over bet. I'm going to focus on Astronaut and Sandro the Great.
Very good. All right, let's turn our attention to, and I'll have that up right on, as soon as we get off the air. I'm sorry that it was delayed today.
I'm going to need more results and less excuses, you know. Steve.
easy. that river flows both ways. The action tomorrow, and let me give everybody the cross country pick five specifics: the Belmont 7th, then the Churchill 8th, the Belmont 8th, the Belmont 10th. Then two Churchill for the Louisville feature, the 11th. So Belmont 7, Churchill 8, Belmont 8, Belmont 10, Belmont Churchill 11. Okay, there's your sequence. But there's also other interesting action, including not that we're Empire 6 players during, you know, non-giveaway days, but it does start with a good New York bred second level allowance, and I'm curious what your thought was in that fifth race tomorrow. Nick, let's start there.
Yeah, fun race, and one where it looks on paper like there should be a decent amount of pace, and I think if you're going to take that approach, then you're going to want to look for somebody coming from a little bit off of it. I don't think there are a whole lot of options, and I just can't trust a horse like Twisted Tom, who, I mean, really his career looked like it was over, and then suddenly he ran two big races off the claim for AC Avila with that one poor effort in the Alex M. Robb in between. I think he's a horse that you have to use. I wouldn't really want to focus on him too terribly much, but, I mean, to me, the three horses that fit this race from a style perspective are all on the outside. It's Twisted Tom, Playwright, and Fleet Irish. And Fleet Irish is going to be the best price, so that's where I landed. He's getting a pretty big upgrade at Pilot to Jorge Vargas. Not that Oscar Gomez really did anything wrong, and taking the Haynes field out of the equation, that field was just quite a bit too tough for this horse. He ran very well two back when he was second to Twisted Tom at 9-1 and had to go a little bit wider. Coming from off of it, had to make a prolonged move. I actually think the one turn might fit him well. I know he's gone a mile in the 16th at Belmont in the past and didn't really do so effectively, but he also really wasn't given much of a chance to do anything that day. So he felt like he'd be a decent enough price. I'm not going to be surprised if Playwright ends up winning this race, but boy, he's faced weaker in his last two, and this is a situation where this was a really informed horse that now is going to have to come off a little bit of a break, and you wonder if maybe something about the winter or Aqueduct woke him up a little bit, because, I mean, heck, he was in for 12.5 basically during Saratoga last year. So I thought it was a fun race and one where I'd rather take a price and just look for a little bit of value.
Good. I'm glad I asked, because it looked like a spot that you wanted to be aggressive. Let's turn toward the later action, and the pick five actually starts with a $32,000 claimer, and then we get the late pick four and the start of the cross-country pick five with that seventh race. Might as well start there, Nick. You can do the late pick four, and we'll fold in cross-country pick five thoughts. A mile on the grass, fillies and mares, three and ups, and there's enough first-time starters, that including Chad Brown, that is obviously going to take money. Not the favorite, but that's a Christophe Clément on the outside. How do we start this off?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see who ends up being favored. And I know Clément's Too Sexy was made the favorite by David Aragona and could end up being the favorite, but it really feels like cost benefit's going to take a lot of money in here. This is another European bred horse that was purchased at Tattersall's, and that of course is a sale that's brought us Newspaper of Record and Digital Age and Demarchelier and Domestic Spending, who was a tremendously impressive winner on Sunday, and this looks like a horse that seems pretty well manned first time out. He's been working steadily. She's been working steadily going all the way back to the early part of the spring. And probably, there was probably a chance that things could have been accelerated. This might have been a Keeneland horse or maybe an early in the Belmont meet horse. But either way, she looks like one that we've seen before, and it's usually pretty darn good. So I think cost benefit's an absolute must-use. Clearly Too Sexy is a horse that can win. She had a very good trip last time at Gulfstream, and the quality of the competition she faced that day relative to what she's facing here is a little unknown, and I think it's just a little bit too much of a leap to take a horse like this at 5-2 or 3-1 and assume that she's going to end up performing at the same level against a horse that could have potential like Cost Benefit or even the Shug McGahee trained Windfall Profit, who I thought improved. We actually talked that day about the Tampa races because there was a pick five carryover, and I liked Windfall Profit coming back off the layoff. And then Willie Martinez made an ambitious move going down the backstretch and moved aggressively to sort of contest the pace and ended up missing by a nose. And it was one of those situations where you could be a little frustrated that he moved soon, but really all in all, he did what he had to do in terms of getting her into a competitive position. So I would be willing to use her coming back. She's going to have to improve, no doubt about it. But I think it's a race primarily that looks like it's among the 3, 5, 8, and 10. And I say the 8 for Jimmy Toner, another Empire Maker. This one out of a winless dam, but she dropped one stake winner that Empire Lady is a half to. So there's some pedigree there, and this is a barn that was quiet all winter, but Hawkish's performance on Sunday and then one other effort at this young meet, I think, shows that things are going to start to turn around quickly.
Eighth race, which is part of the cross country after the Churchill eighth goes. We'll circle. Did you look at that? You looked at the Churchills, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, you know what? Let's do it in order then. Churchill eighth.
You know, these two, obviously, I mean, the racing at Churchill has been extremely competitive, a lot of fun, and closing it out with the Louisville is outstanding. So the eighth at Churchill, I'm pulling up my PPs here. Ace at Churchill is the turf event, turf sprint. This, you know, we've seen a few horses in here that we've had run-ins with in the past that have performed well at Churchill, including I know the race that we were talking about a few weeks ago that featured Hidden Facts, where she drifted out in mid-stretch and ended up causing some traffic problems, and I think that hurt the horse that I bet, who probably wouldn't have won anyway, but. Dixie and Candyland was one of the affected. I thought that she was kind of the horse that was in line to win, and that ended up allowing Whimsical Muse to come over the top on the outside. So I felt like Dixie and Candyland was probably the horse to beat. If Le Perroux is maybe a little bit more aggressive with Hidden Facts, I know that seems like a bit of an oxymoron, given that he's not really very aggressive at all. The speed in here is suspect, and she's one I think that really can get in the mix. You know, I think you're going to end up using a lot of the horses exiting that race from May 30th, a lot of them coming back on relatively short rest in doing so, including even Beat, to go along with Hidden Facts and Dixie and Candyland. And then you have the question mark of Queen of Shades, right, because she's got an aggressive jockey, very good pace rider, coming out of the Jason Service Barn with speed and an outside post. So in a lot of ways, Queen of Shades will go a long way towards determining how this race ends up being run, and that might end up helping the horse like Even Beat quite a bit, so too Dixie and Candyland. So unfortunately, I think it's a race where you're going to have to go relatively deep. I don't have a particularly big lean on any one horse. I do think that the winner will probably come from one of those exiting the May 30th race, and perhaps Queen of Shades is the next likeliest candidate.
Brings us back to Belmont for the 8th. State bred allowance for fillies and mares. They're going short on the dirt and a field of 12 in here.
Yeah, good bunch. And a very competitive field. Another race where it looks like if the field stays intact, there's going to be a good amount of pace. And I'm actually going to take a little swing with Waylon Josie, who has beaten me a couple of times in the past and actually has run a number of very good races all in a row. Taking out the poor performance in January at Aqueduct, this is a horse that's found her way at least into the superfecta every single time, and that's, there's something to be said for that kind of consistency, right? This is a horse from a small time barn that doesn't have a whole ton of horses and is regularly ridden by an apprentice jockey that, you know, to be perfectly honest, isn't very good. So she clearly is one with ability. I know I'm gonna end up taking a chance with that jockey again, but this is a situation where things might end up setting up really well for her. Her last two Belmont efforts at the end of 2019 were both very good, one on the slop, one on a fast track, so she's clearly got some versatility. And who are you supposed to be so enamored with in here, right? I mean, Behind the Couch is coming from a barn that, with all due respect to Jeremiah Englehart, he's 3 for his last 79 in New York. And it's very, very clear that something has gone bad with his New York barn. It was very bad over the winter. And the first five cards at Belmont, 6 cards, have not done anything to show that that's ended. Horse Mendacious, second-time starter in the 5th on Sunday, looked like he was loaded around the turn. And as soon as Kendrick Carmouche dropped his hands, there was just nothing there. So these Jeremiah Englehart trainees are going to have to start running better before I become convinced. And Officer Hutch, he's going to end up being one of the choices in here, and quite honestly, she's a horse that really is not much faster than Waylon Josie and is going to be about 1/5 of the price, so why not take a little bit of a chance and hope that you can juice up the pick 5 a little bit. And that's also in large part because the Ogden Phipps is a race where you're probably going to go pretty narrow. And my theory on the Ogden Phipps, based on the way CC came back and ran, is that I think that the horses that did a lot of the hard running are probably, it probably took a little bit out of them. And I know that John Sadler very astutely got Ollie's Candy a couple more weeks off in not running her in the Gamely. Perhaps he didn't, you know, the stake schedule in New York was unknown at that point, so the Phipps coming up, and then, of course, it came up extremely light relative to what a race like the Fleur de Lis looks like, and it does seem as if Ollie's Candy will be in a prominent position from the start, either setting or stalking a pace set by Blame. So there's she's clearly the horse to beat. I feel like the way that Point of Honor ran last time was probably a less taxing effort, and I hope I'm not splitting hairs and looking at it that way, but I'm more inclined to bet Point of Honor coming from off the pace, hoping that Blamed and Ollie's Candy hook up, than just simply taking Ollie's Candy and saying, well, gosh, if she runs back to that Oaklawn race, then she's just going to beat these horses. That's true, but it just seems like a little bit, it's enough of a leap to me to look for an alternative. So I'm going to see if Point of Honor can't beat her and maybe hopefully benefit from things getting a little bit cooked up on the front end. Other than those two, Golden Award seems like the only other option, but I mean, she would just be nothing more than a backup to me in a race where it does seem like one of those two favorites is pretty much supposed to win.
Our friend Papo Morales wrote me this morning, Nick, too, that when it came time to discuss this race, he wondered about Point of Honor only, you know, most recently working May 24th coming out of Palm Beach Downs before they came north, and that George hasn't you know, stretched her legs or at least gotten a timed workout for her since then in advance of this race. And it's not, well, it's almost 3 weeks, really, which is interesting a little bit, even just an easy half mile, which is actually George's M.O.
Yeah, it is surprising. I noticed it last night and kind of raised an eyebrow. It's definitely not what you'd expect. I mean, I assume he's just maybe aggressively galloping her, and it is atypical of his barn to do something like that. So I'm not positive, but it's a situation where you kind of have to hope that he's at least honed in on what needs to be done in order to have her there and effective in what's obviously a very, very important race. I mean, this is a horse that's worth a lot of money to begin with. She's a beautifully bred filly, and she's got a grade two win already and multiple grade one placings, but getting that grade one win obviously is pretty significant. And she vaults to one of the leaders of the division. So assuming that George is going to have her ready, I think is a relatively safe assumption, but yeah, there is a little risk associated with that.
All right, and I put a query out to George, and we'll see what he says. So that gets us through the FIPS, and we come back to the Belmont 10th, the nightcap. It's a starter allowance going the dogleg mile for fillies and mares. How do we close out the sequence in New York?
I mean, boy, she had a really good trip last time, but Hurricane Breeze looks like a horse that's going to be in an ideal spot in here. She ended up second beaten in nose by Toffin. Toffin's a horse that had maiden special weight type ability for Brian Lynch and ended up on the lead last time, set a very, very slow pace. And even though Hurricane Breeze really had nothing go against her, it was a situation where she probably needed a little bit more time, need a little bit more ground, and I think going the mile at Belmont will definitely help her chances quite a bit. So I think she's the horse to beat very clearly. Bean Counter is the other one you kind of have to use, but Bean Counter's last was bad. There's no way around it. She set an extremely slow pace, was outfinished by a total mediocrity, and she's going to have to run a lot better to beat a horse like Hurricane Breeze. So it's going to be one of those two, in my opinion, and luckily you'll be able to get out of these last two Belmont legs being relatively narrow, so that's good because you're not going to be able to do so in every other leg.
Well, and the final leg of the cross-country pick five, back to Churchill for what is always fun, and that is ending the card with a graded stake or any kind of stake. It's the mile and a half Louisville. We talked earlier this morning to Marty McGee, and Marty is I won't say taking the easy way out, but he thought that Arklow comes in with plenty of zip and mojo.
Yeah, I mean it's I guess you're, I think the easy way out is the right way to describe it. He's a horse to beat. There's no question about it. There's no reason to spend a whole lot of time talking about why you should look for a great number of alternatives, but there are a few alternatives. It seems like it should be an honestly run race. There's a few in here that have a little bit of pace, and that should set things up for Arklow, who clearly needs to get... He needs a setup of sorts. He's been able to overcome it a couple of times in the past. He had a very astute ride when he won the Joe Hirsch last year and stayed pretty close to a very moderate pace. But it looks, when push comes to shove, as if he's better than these horses, and he's probably just going to get the job done for that reason. There's a couple of strangers. Perfect Tapatino is one that doesn't really look like a whole heck of a lot, and this is one that Charles Fipke bred and is bringing back to America after really not doing a whole hell of a lot overseas, and maybe as a horse that will benefit from being on firmer ground. Really did catch a lot of Bakke turf courses, but there's going to have to be a monster amount of improvement for him to beat this kind of field. And he's no lemon as a horse. I felt like always would benefit from a mile and a half or more. He did show improvement as he went longer last year. He's half to Midnight Tea Time, who's a horse who was effective going long as well. So I think you could be... You could expect him to run well. Grand Motion's horses obviously have all done so, but I think a lot of people are going to end up gravitating to Arklow and expecting Arklow to win this race just based on class and the things that he's done at this distance. So it's another situation where you don't have to spend a ton of money helping him out. I'm going to use a little bit of He's No Lemon, and I'll probably find a way to get Tiz the Slam on my tickets a little bit, because it does seem like there's a chance he can control the pace in here. But if Arklow shows up with his normal type of effort, I think he's going to be very, very tough to beat.
There it is. And the cross-country pick five, plus the late action at Belmont, and all of Nick's analysis brought to you by, excuse me, by RTN. And RTN BYK, if you go to, you'll see the banner at our website, and you can sign up for 5 free days of RTN. And, yeah, and frankly, once you do that, you're going to then go ahead and pay $15 a month, because your head's going to explode. the opportunity, you got a 4-screen breakout that you can bring things up at any time. If you're somebody that likes the international racing and Greyhound, you name it, it's got everything. Standard bred, any kind of racing whatsoever is there for you. So make use of the opportunity to try RTN for free, 5 days. RTN, when you sign up, in the code RTNBYK, and that will open the door to a whole new world of being able to enjoy all kinds of racing. Nick, on Sunday in New York, too, the Mike Lee, we start the Big Apple triple sequence. That looks like it came up okay. I'll tell you one outfit that is really poised, and after the two wins yesterday, how about Claude Ray McGahee III?
Yeah, he well, when Shug wins, the public wins. He is definitely the most. People in sports betting talk about public teams and teams that people gravitate towards that are just recreational bettors. And, I mean, nobody gets more recreational money than Shug. Bill Mott's a close second, but everybody loves Shug horses. And it was nice to see Alondra run a good race yesterday. She had been I don't even know what had happened with Alondra, right? It was these odd performances where she was just completely dropping out early and showing no kind of speed. And it was like, damn, I mean, this horse wired her debut. So where did all that speed go? But it does look like his barn could certainly wake up, or it has woken up, and that he could have some good days moving forward. Windfall Profit tomorrow would obviously be nice. I'm gonna find a way to include her, but there's a few decent looking starters for him over the next couple of days.
Bring Brandon Lee in, because Brandon's going to give everybody the information about the upcoming contest at Lone Star, and they're going to be the first venue in the country that takes on contest players, live and in person. Nick, as we do that, some thoughts about Sunday's Texas Champions Day that you would have otherwise have made the morning line for at Sam Houston. Actually, probably you did make the morning line for, and then the card went awry thanks to a transformer. But some thoughts, any spots in that sequence tomorrow Sunday that stand out?
Yeah, it's funny. I actually did make the morning line. We had a really bad day here weather-wise on that Saturday, and then the transformer blew, and then nothing ended up running. So it was very unfortunate, but Lone Star's brought back all of those races, and some of the fields are very similar, some of them are a little different, but all in all, it looks like a lot of the principals are back, and the just running through them real quick, the Yellow Rose looks like a race where she's our fastest, should be very, very tough to beat. She's a horse who's been very effective sprinting in the past against Texas bred. She won the Valor Farm at Lone Star last year, and won the Yellow Rose at Sam Houston last year as well, so it one of those situations where it looks like being back in state bred competition should do her a world of good. The Spirit of Texas, I mean, the names you're going to see on this card, if you're playing Lone Star for the first time or don't do it regularly, you're going to see a lot of Asmussen, Calhoun, and Broberg. And those three end up combining to win roughly 70% of the races at Lone Star. And the good thing about this card is that it does seem like there are a few spots where they're going to be competing against each other, and the Spirit of Texas is one of those examples, as I'm a Bling takes on Direct Dial. And Direct Dial is a horse that doesn't really have a whole great deal of speed, and that sometimes works against him, and this seems like one of those situations where he just might be outfooted by a couple of horses in here, potentially including I'm a Bling, who should have had his speed sharpened a little bit after the turf start last week, actually last Monday. I think that the dangerous horse here to price might be Affluent Gentleman on the inside, moving to Ronnie Craven's barn. He does a good job and might end up getting free in the early stages. Ernesto Valdez Jimenez is a very good front-end rider, and so I'm thinking that he might ask him for speed right out of the gate. That could certainly make him very dangerous. The Richard King going long on the turf looks like a race that in many ways should be dominated by Redditory. Redditory was a handy winner of the Houston Turf, which was the prep night for the for Texas champions that ended up not happening. And he was very impressed. Very, very good effort. Looked like he was going to be a huge favorite in the Richard King on the card that ended up being canceled, and looks like the same kind of situation here. The groovy prep was won by Gold Pilot. He's back for Brett Calhoun. He was a very impressive winner that night. He's facing Good Judgment and Bubba Bling, the two horses that were behind him that night, and looks as if they're all sort of in a similar kind of spot. Does seem like he'll get the best of it trip-wise. But Good Judgment is a horse that improved coming back off the Jim's Orbit and won an allowance race at Lone Star very handily. Sat on top of a hot pace that day, too. This should have a hot pace with Wonders of His Love signed up, and that certainly will work to Gold Pilot's benefit. There's got to be a few opportunities along the way to try and beat some of these favorites, though, right? Always in the Money looks tough in the Bar Lass, but I do think that Brightest will run better, maybe being given a little bit of an opportunity to sit off of it. Always in the Money's last race on the slop at Will Rogers was outstanding, and if she runs back to that kind of effort, she's going to be very, very tough to beat. But I think there's enough reason to be a little skeptical, and taking a Steve Azerson horse at a fair price always seems like a good idea. The San Jacinto would have obviously been Texas Bell's race to lose if she ended up running, but she's not, as she was the Miss Houston winner in the prep for this race, and that works to the benefit of Corluna. Corluna tried to rally into the hot pace that night in the Miss Houston, ended up coming up a little bit short. Probably a horse that will benefit if Richard Arami rides her a little bit more aggressively early. She's shown some speed in the past, and the drop way out and make one run style the last few times hasn't really worked out all that great. A couple of prices that deserve some consideration here towards the outside. Brazos Angel set a fast pace at Sam Houston last time and stayed on, and just may end up finding her way to the lead in here. And if she does, that could make her very, very dangerous. The turf at Lone Star couldn't be any more different than it is at Sam Houston. Sam Houston's turf course is very lush, quite a bit slower. The turf at Lone Star is very fast, very short, very firm, and I would imagine the temperatures are going to be plenty hot between now and Sunday. That will ensure a very firm turf course. And Herb's Love is the other one that I would include for Danny Pish, who was much too close to that hot pace in the Miss Houston. Deshaun Parker gets on. He swept Texas Champions Preview Night and coming back down to Texas to ride this card. She'll benefit if able to sit back and make one run. The Star of Texas is the centerpiece of the card, and it's a race that on Texas Champions Night was not very interesting and not very competitive, and it actually is very interesting and very competitive in here because you have Kenai Bob getting back into state bred competition, moving into the barn of Mindy Willis after a very good effort at Will Rogers. Cowboy Bling is another clear contender, and a horse that is equally adept on turf and dirt, maybe a little bit better on turf, but one that's done well on dirt. And you know, you have the distance question because you have horses like Galactica stretching out. He's So Zazzy that's been effective at multiple different trips. Cat Second Silver, who's probably a little better going shorter. Mucho Dinero, who's drawn favorably, could show some speed. So it looks like a very competitive way to close out the stakes races on what's been a fun card. And I'll tell you, the racing at Lone Star, it's not just me being a Texas homer, but it's been very, very competitive. The fields have been big, and they've got a great 12% takeout pick five that also offers a 4 out of 5 consolation. So the good thing is it keeps you in business a little bit if you end up dropping a leg along the way, and all you have to do is make sure that you take that money and put it right back into the pick five the next day.
Well, and with Brandon Lee in the background, Brandon, Nick did all the advertising for you.
He did, and I had a note here to make sure I mentioned the pick five. So, Nick, thank you very much. We're very excited about that pick five this year.
Hey, no problem. Best bets around us. Everybody's got to support those low takeout pick fives. Luckily, we've got a few of them going on now. But yeah, the opportunities there are huge with the low take and the big field.
And Nick, I imagine you've gone to Lone Star for some of Brandon's contests. No.
You know, I haven't been to a Lone Star contest in probably 10 years. I need to get up there for sure. I was a mutual clerk at Lone Star during college, so I have a lot of history with Lone Star Park, and there's a chance I'll make my way up there in a couple of weeks.
Well, on that topic, absolutely save a spot for him, and also, maybe for baby, does have a baby's first contest.
Might be the time for it, right? Not the safest time ever to go stay in a hotel right now. They're squeaky clean.
Exactly. They've all been steam cleaned. I love it. Yeah, Nick, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. I'll let you have Brandon. You guys chop it up. I'll talk to you later.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, NTAM1215. And as I said, I'll right at the top of the hour, I'll as soon as we're off the air, I'll get the Friday analysis up on the website. Now we got Brandon Lee to ourselves. Brandon, there. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
You're going to be the first contest with human beings since March. Tell us, let everybody know how you're going to handle it and what they can expect.
Well, so this Sunday, which is going to be the first day with live racing with spectators, we are going to do a makeup on-track qualifying contest where we're going to give away $10,000 bankrolls into the June 27th NHC contest. So that's a makeup from March that we were going to roll on March 21st but ended up having to shut down. We're going to make that up this Sunday. So we're excited about that. So what guests can expect when they arrive on Sunday, everybody will be temperature checked on their way in. There will be a short little CDC questionnaire asking people, if they're experiencing any symptoms, if they have any household members that have tested positive, etc. We are going to go with free admission the rest of the way. So all reservations have been suspended until further notice. Anybody that had made a reservation for the season prior to the pandemic, that's all going to get refunded. We're working on that now. So, we're going to start with our second level, which is our box seat level. It's all air conditioned. But we are prepared that if demand exceeds 50% occupancy of that level, we may even open up additional areas. But as far as the contest goes, we're going to use one of our group rooms. It's called the Ali Sheba Room. And it's plenty big enough. Hopefully we get our normal contest turnout both this Sunday as well as on the 27th. I think we will. I think there's been a lot of pent-up demand to get out there and get to the racetrack. So Horse Tourneys has been running tournaments all the way through, and we've been doing our own feeders and qualifiers, leading up, from the first quarter and then now picking them back up this Sunday. So we're excited.
And then the follow up beside this, this week, when's the next one?
So on June 27th, that's our big one. So we have guaranteed four NHC seats, and we can go as high as 10 if we get enough entries. So we'll start with a fifth seat at 100 entries, and then 25 more after that. We're also giving away $7,500 in cash, and we think we have one of the best tournaments around because we are one of the few jurisdictions where we aren't allowed to charge an entry fee. So we just use that to our advantage and advertise the heck out of it. It's 100% player bankroll, and which obviously helps the player, earn more back and churn. And, with 1 in 25 odds to win an NHC seat, you're not going to find that, any better in very many places. So we think we have one of the best tournament formats around. And, this Sunday it's going to be a mythical $2 win place, similar to the NHC, but on the live money tournament on the 27th, you can play win, play, show, and attract an exacta. And, we see a lot of people come out ahead on those tournaments because one of the things that I don't think gets talked about enough in tournament play is in some of these live money formats where you limit the wagering menu. We've seen every single tournament we've ever run in this format. The players as a whole, for the group, they actually come out ahead. And I think that needs to get talked about more because, you know, in general, we know that that's not necessarily the case. But when you kind of box everybody into a certain format, you know, they actually turn a profit.
Sweet. And the, you know, these two opportunities for those that are, you know, obviously those that are close by are going to make the trip to Grand Prairie, but if for 2 weeks hence, a little bit more planning and, you know, in terms of contact with you, Brandon, and if people, you know, want to come to town that are, you know, just dying for, you know, a chance to play live and get to a racetrack. I mean, that's been as much a call from players as anything. I mean, they've been very happy to be able to keep the action going, but I think people are just missing being at the track and being in that environment, especially the contest players that, you know, that travel to events. So it really feels like this could be the start of the season between now and by the time we get to Vegas in February. If people want to get a hold of you and don't know the lay of the land, around the area, around the Metroplex and Grand Prairie, how do they get in contact with you to help them make arrangements to come to town?
Well, they can email me directly at brandon.lee, and that's L-E-I-G-H, at lonestarpark.com. They can also reach me on Twitter, at JazzManBrandon, and they can also go to LoneStarPark.com, and we have all the contest information there. There's a sign-up form. It's not mandatory on the live money tournament. You can just show up with a bankroll, and we'll get you in. So, you know, lots of options, lots of flexibility on those live money tournaments to be able to get people in even day of. Wanted to mention also just, you know, real quick to follow up with what Nick said. So far this meet, we're at 9.5 runners per race, which is a huge increase from us in years past. We've adjusted our schedule a lot. We with the partnership with the Texas Horsemen's Partnership, as well as the Texas Thoroughbred Association, we've added some dates to our meet. We're now running through August 11th, primarily on Sundays, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. But we are going to run on that Saturday, June 27th, primarily for the handicapping tournament. We wanted to make sure we kept that on the schedule. So, you know, we think we are providing pretty good betting opportunities as well as slotting ourselves on the schedule to where, you know, we can get some traction.
Tremendous. Tremendous. Jazzman Brandon on Twitter, brandon.lee, if you're going to write to him. And I wonderfully got a... acknowledge the L-E-I-G-H because that's my middle name, as it happens. And Brandon, I'm delighted to get a chance to talk to you and put the spotlight on Lone Star. Steve Asmussen the other day, it's so funny, Steve came on and he said, you know, we talked before the show, and he said, when I'm on, ask me about what's going on in Lone Star because they're doing really good. He said, I've got horses that I kept there that normally would have come to Kentucky, and he was raving about the program. And Nick just said the same exact thing, and here you are to, you know, put the exclamation on it. So I appreciate it. Play in to the June 27th contest. There's a last chance qualifier as well on the 26th, but Lone Star, the first of the contest sites to get things going here post pandemic. Brandon, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
No, we'll get you on again, and then we'll get the winner. We'll get some of the winners. As many as four seats going to be available, and things start on Sunday with this big Texas Champions Day. We'll stay right here and close out the last dozen minutes or so with Mike Welch. He's back, and Mike, just like clockwork, you suggested there might be a force out of the Rainbow Six, and you get off the air, and it's confirmed.
Yeah, you know, and it was a good decision to put it here. I mean, last week, you didn't want to do it last week on top of the Santa Anita Derby, and next week is the Belmont. So if you're going to do it on a Saturday, this is the right one. You don't want to wait two more weeks to take a chance. Someone's going to hit it. It's been perilously close to getting hit a couple of times. So, you know, they're in line for a big day tomorrow. hopefully the weather will cooperate. The forecast yesterday when I did my analysis for the card was about 70% chance of rain. Just check now, and that's been downgraded to 40. So hopefully they'll be able to get through this without a change of surface in the turf races. And I give Mike Lakeout credit. Seeing that forecast put four dirt races in the six-race sequence, usually in these things we see three or four turf at the end of the card. So if it does rain, we'll only have two races to deal with, and there's a lot of horses in both of those. So, but with a little luck now, that rain will hold off at least till we get through the Rainbow Six.
Excellent. Mike, how about a couple of quick run-through? Let's just give everybody the lay of the land of this sequence. It starts at 3:14 Eastern. What do we think this pool is going to hit?
I mean, now it's hard to say with all the other tracks back in business. I mean, it was like a bonanza the last time they gave it away because we were the only game in town. I think they added about 8 million or something to it, 9 million, maybe 10, I think. It might not be quite that, but I'm going to guess usually four times the carryover is about is a good formula.
Yep.
So I'm guessing 8, and it'll probably get up to about 10, depending on, what's out there around the country up against it tomorrow, around that time, big races or whatever. I mean, you're going to be up against Churchill, Belmont, and Santa Anita. That wasn't the case last time. So we'll see, but I'm guessing they'll get close to 10.
That was the number I kind of thumbnailed to. Let's touch a couple of thoughts. And your analysis, of course, is up at DRF.com. I think you said you were doing there was going to be another clocker report, right?
Yeah, no, we're doing the clocker report right through Sunday. So I'm actually working on the Saturday clocker report as we speak.
Nice.
When I did the analysis again, it was a giant question mark whether we'd stay on the dirt or not. So I made my first pick, Tat Weege, the Todd Pletcher $2.5 million Tappet colt that's finally maybe going to make his debut as a four-year-old here, but then maybe not either, But the work I saw of his, the last work from Palm Beach Downs, I got to see the tape of it, was terrific. Dave Norton had some good works on him going back. He looks like the real deal, and I think if they switch over and he gets in, he's definitely the horse to beat. If the race stays on turf, I mean, this 6 or 7 you could probably use in here. I don't know what to do with the Staffy Joseph first time or Elastor, who's had a big string of works, but most of them are at the Gulfstream West, so I haven't seen him. I picked Imperial Moment. I like the way this horse has been training here. Looks like loose on the lead. Seems to be doing well. Louis Roussel got off to a good start. So he was my top pick, but by no means would he be a single. I mean, that's just a bunch you could use. One of the horses I threw in for a price was Metcalf at 15-1. You probably got to use Constitutional Pal. You definitely have to use Leading West going back to the turf if he goes back to the turf. So I think you're going to need the spread in there to stay alive.
What else?
Okay.
Press
I mean,
forward.
You want me to go race by race? The 8th race.
Sure.
Man with a Plan is the one that, big question mark. He comes off a huge win, big figure on the top, drop down to 8. Jose D'Angelo claims him, wheels him back in 3 weeks off that big number. Will he bounce? Will he repeat it? He's going to have some pace pressure inside, especially Vincent William. I think he's the best horse in here for sure if he's able to repeat the last race. If he doesn't, I thought the race might set up for a horse like Shanghai Moon. Toss his last in the slop against the bias. Go back the race before that mile race. Pretty decent effort. And if there's a big pace meltdown on the turn back, I think Shanghai Moon has got to be used coming on strong at the end. 9th race, again, turf, question mark, turf or dirt. Dirt, there's a whole bunch of main track only. See, if it goes to the dirt, I went 15-13. Stays on the turf, a lot of ways to go. My top pick was Hot and Heavy, second pick Don G. But again, if it looks like grass, you might want to be spreading. 10th race, I didn't have a real solid opinion. I got two horses coming off some decent works in here, the 8 and the 10, Reserve Not Attained and Bible Man, and they might wind up running each other into the ground. I think I made my top pick because of that Flawless Moon, the morning line favorite. Last time, made a four-wide middle move, flattened out. Been away since then, but looks like the best horse in here, especially off the pace, if the pace scenario plays out for him. Got to watch how the track is playing, too, especially if we get some weather, because we've noted a lot of outside favor in tracks the last few weeks, especially when we took some rain. 11th race, you know, it's the big race, $55,000 pot. You got two grade one horses in here, quite a coup for the racing office. Start with Diamond Oops, best horse in here without a doubt, if he's ready for close to best effort off a four-month layoff. Patrick Biancone said he thinks he's going to need a race, but, you know, that's speculative. Even if he needs one, he might be good enough to win. Bath Wizard, you know, he's still got to prove to me that he can beat older horses. He hasn't done that yet. He did pass a few in the Breeders' Cup, but all his big efforts last year against three-year-olds and his one win since January of a year ago came in the Grade 1 Pennsylvania Derby, but with the help of a truly biased racetrack. I wasn't crazy about the way he was training until he put blinkers on it May 31st. He worked the best work I've seen from him in a while. So I got to use him, and I got to use Noble Drama off that nice effort last time against Network Effect. And then the last race, you know, typical last race here, pretty wide open. Just Kidding might be a single on a lot of tickets on the Big Sappy Joseph drop, but he could get some pace pressure from So Long Chuck, who's also a major player. I picked for a price I'm going to use also with those guys, Dexter Road. Looks like the race could set up for him. But, again, you know, these are the kind of races, those last legs, big fields, anything can happen. And usually does, it seems.
Yeah, exactly. Desert General. I just kind of figure I got to...
Yeah, I mean, look, you can use him, too. He hasn't won in a long, long time. That's the one knock against him. But that's the condition of the race, if I'm not mistaken. Non-winners of a race since a date, December 13th. So it is a race for horses that haven't won in a long time. But, you know, again, if it's a pace collapse, he could be right there. Could be right there, too.
Well, a potential $10 million pot tomorrow at Gulfstream as they force out the Rainbow Six, adding to what is kind of a general good day of racing, and that feature is absolutely worth tuning in, much like the midweek feature the other day was. And, Mike, by the way, we understand we'll get a decision from Patrick and Dean Reeves tomorrow on Sol Volante.
Okay, yeah, it could be. I mean, Patrick said, you know, over the weekend was the last I talked to him. I think if he goes, he'll jump on a van on Monday, so it gives him a couple of days. From the way I'm reading it, it's Dean Reeves really is leading. He wants to win the Belmont. He'd like to go if Patrick gives him the green light that the horse is okay. If not, you know, they got a great fallback in the Bluegrass. You know, the problem is if you go down to New York, you're going to run into Tisdale Law. He's going to be 3-5. You're probably third choice in there at 6-1. You go to the Bluegrass with this horse. You wait the 5 weeks. You're probably going to be one of the favorites in there. You know, Belmont a little more prestigious, but so I could see the dilemma a little bit. But you know, to me, difference of wheeling back in 10 days and wheeling back in 5 weeks. We see how this new Triple Crown trail can be pretty demanding on these horses as we're moving forward. So I think Patrick's cognizant of that. You know, he wants to do everything as easy as he can with this horse and just get him to Churchill on September 5th in good shape. So I don't know. You know, it's a tough decision to make. My guess, he's probably leaning one way, and like Dean Reeves is leaning the other. The owner, we'll see whose decision prevails.
Mike Welch, everybody, DRF Welch, of course, to help you with the action tomorrow. And then the horse might get on a van. When are you getting on the van?
I'm heading down on Wednesday. Going to drive up on Wednesday. Hopefully it'll be there clocking Friday morning, start clocking in preparation for Saratoga, and hopefully a clocker report over the July 4th weekend, too. And if they let me, I'll be there for the Belmont Stakes. I'm not sure what the protocol is for the press. You know, if it may only be one reporter per publication, we know who that's going to be. So Dave Grenning is down there. But I'm going to try to see if we can social distance one more person into the press box next Saturday, but that's a decision that's TBA, just like I'm not sure if I'll be there on Belmont Day, and I'm not sure if Saul Vellante will be on Belmont Day. We still have those decisions to find out.
Well,
it's a strange
everything works.
Thing in summer. For sure.
Yes, it is. If things work out, though, Jay Pribman will be getting a picture of you and me and Greinich from King Umberto's. And
are they open? I mean, have they opened their doors yet? I don't know what the situation is down there.
At the least, we'll get a takeout pie.
We'll get a takeout.
Exactly.
Just for
exactly.
info, too, in case people haven't noticed, they are opening the casino here on Thursday, and the Ten Palms Dining Room by reservation only is open Friday. There's still no actually spectators allowed in the grandstand and around the building during the races, but I guess you can go and get a table and watch the races from Ten Palms starting next Friday, barring any further changes in the, you know, the COVID climate down here in Florida. So that was the news out of Gulfstream yesterday. They apparently maybe reached out to let the public come back to the races, and that's put on hold for now.
I appreciate that, too. Thanks for that update. Mike Welch, everybody, DRF Welch, and we'll see Mike in New York next week, and we'll pull up and send you out into what should be a really good weekend. And I don't want to leave without noting that they're going to be jumping at Middleburg tomorrow, and they've got a tremendous 11-race card. If you go to nationalsteeplechase.com, you can watch it. And the Temple Guathmi, 130, the Grade 3, including Scorpiancer, Surprising Soul, Belisarius, and much, much more. Ranistan, Zanjabil, a bunch of Grade 1 winners as the jumpers are back for you. Can't bet it, but you can watch it and appreciate 11 race card at Middleburg tomorrow. And then again in 2 weeks as well for the Virginia Gold Cup. I want to thank Marty McGee, Randy Bradshaw, Jay Pribman, Hammer, Brandon Lee from Lone Star, Nick Tamaro, and Mike Welch just now, KC behind the glass. Best of luck, everybody, for a great weekend. And I'll be with you on Monday. Probably I'm going to hopefully be in, at Belmont Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I got to stay around. I got an eye appointment, an important eye appointment on Tuesday. Good luck. Talk to you tomorrow, Monday.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University. Executive Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.